Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on uniformitarianism right after this. Well, how many laws did Moses give us in the Mosaic Law, and how many laws has the state given us in our secular government? Well, Moses gave us 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments in our state. Our government, at last count, has given us 2.5 million laws. Now, the Apostle Peter made this observation when he said we ought to obey God rather than men in Acts 5, verse 29. Our Congress has said that we ought to voluntarily apply the teachings of the Scripture in the lives of families, individuals, and societies. And our Supreme Court has said that there's a higher loyalty than loyalty to this country or to the state. They said it's loyalty to God in Seeger versus United States. Now, you know, every authority is in agreement. The Congress, the Supreme Court, and God Almighty Himself all agree that the Scriptures are the final authority on law. Now, to learn these 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments and how to use them against government intrusion into your God-given rights is a right. It's a duty. It's an obligation that we owe to ourselves, our families, and to our societies. And here at the law school, we teach these 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, along with the penalties for the violation of these laws. And we do that twice a year, here in the spring and the fall. So why don't you make it a point to regain your First Amendment right to free exercise? You know, the First Amendment is the gate to the Second and to your whole Bill of Rights. The law of God may be old, but it is not old-fashioned, and it is very relevant to our lives and very relevant to our rights today. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our Mosaic Law School is also available on compact disc for adult home study. And if you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org, just click onto the archives page and you can download that free General Law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Hey, we're talking about uniformitarianism here, and when we broke off last time, we were talking about radiometric dating. And I showed you that if you take 160 million years and divide it into 3 billion, it's about 20. Actually, I did the arithmetic. It's 18.75 times. You know, if I said I'm coming over to your house, and you said, well, when are you coming over? And I said, oh, somewhere between 1 and 18.75 hours from now. You know, you'd say, wait a minute, you're coming over between 1 and 18 hours from now. Can't you get it a little bit closer than that? I've observed this over the years. Sometimes these uniformitarianism stories, you know, they get to be pretty wild. Now listen to this. There's a case history here that I gave you last thing we talked about last night. Volcanic lava rocks from Hawaii were subjected to potassium-argon dating. And the result was 160 million to 3 billion years ago. That's when these rocks supposedly originated. But when we looked at the history of the lava flow from the volcano, it was discovered that the particular lava flow from which these rocks were taken showed that the eruption occurred in the year 1801. So, you know, here's lava coming out of the ground. It's dated 160 to 3 billion years old by radiometric dating. That's very scientific, you know. Listen, there's no science involved in this crap. That's not science. That's by guess and by golly. And the by guess and by golly is wrong. Not by 18.75 times. It's worse than that. Let me see if I can divide this up. From 1801 to today. Now, this book was written here about 1990. So, 1801, 1901, 2001, it's about 200 years. The actual age of the rocks is 200 years. We were here when the rocks were created, when they came out of the ground. So if we were to take 3 billion and then plug it into my Sharp EL1197G3 here, let's see, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Here's 1, 2, 3. Let's try one more zero. Can you get that in there? 369. Oh, yeah, I did. So there's 3 billion. Now, let me divide that by 200. 200. And let's see how close these guys are. Okay. Plus or minus 15 million times, they're getting pretty close. Now, that's right. The difference between 200 years and 3 billion years is 15 million times. These guys are in error by 15 million times. Now, do you think that's scientific? You know, I give you a tape measure, and I say, hey, can you measure this to the nearest inch? And you say, well, I can measure it to the nearest 15 millionth of an inch. Oh, come on. Let's wake up. Let's smell the coffee here. These guys don't know whether their hind ends are bored or punched. That's the bottom line. And these are their numbers. I'm not sitting here, you know, driving stakes in Dracula's heart or something. I'm taking their numbers and just extrapolating them out and saying, hey, what the hell is this all about? You know, I'm a plumber, and if I said, well, I'm gonna run this sewer line down here, and, you know, plus or minus 15 million inches. How much is 15 million inches divided by 12? That's 1,250,000 feet divided by 5,280 is 236,742 miles. I'm going to lay a sewer pipe, and the elevation is going to be plus or minus 236,742 miles. And I'm saying, hey, this is real science. You'd say, you got to be out of your cotton-picking mind. These people write textbooks and sell them to colleges who teach from those college textbooks to the students who pay thousands of dollars a year to learn this kind of nonsense. Hell, the numbers don't even add up. They give tests to see if you can tell if it's between 160 and 3 billion years ago. Let me show you this again. Listen to this. This is called radiometric dating. It's called the potassium-argon method. There's three methods of using these radiometric dating programs. It's potassium-argon, uranium-lead, and carbon-14. Testing the potassium-argon, volcanic lava rock from Hawaii was subjected to potassium-argon dating. The result, 160 million to 3 billion years ago. It actually erupted in 1801, and that's plus or minus several million. I forgot the millions, now I didn't write it down, but let's try it again. 3 billion divided by 200. 15 million. It's plus or minus 15 million years. Oh, my God. No, it's no worse than that. It's 15 million times years. And these guys actually print this crap, and they put it out here, and they sell it. Now, here's a critical question. When there are discrepancies about a rock's age, when the actual age is known, do you suppose there might be similar discrepancies regarding rocks of totally unknown age? Can we assume these ages are correct when the only tests performed were made on the volcanic ash overlying the artifacts? is the volcanic rock age testable? Well, the following familiar discoveries were all dated by the radiometric tests on volcanic ash material overlying the actual artifacts. Skull, 1470, 2.8 million, National Geographic, 673. Lucy, 3 million, National Geographic, 1276. That's December of 1976. And the third one here, Footprints, 3.6 million years, published in National Geographic in April of 1979. Other famous finds have produced some helpful added data. This is the source now, is the Radiocarbon Journal, Volume 11, 1969. Australopithecus, Ethiopia, publicized as 1 to 2 million years old by carbon-argon dating. Carbon? No, not carbon. Back up here and see what that is. Potassium-argon. Potassium-argon dating of the overlying rocks. Mammal bones in the same deposit produced a C14 date of 15,500 years old. Zinjanthropus in Kenya, the overlying volcanic ash gave a potassium-argon age of 2 million years old. The mammal bones in the same deposit were dated by the carbon-14 method at only 10,000 years. Now, when we compare potassium-argon with carbon-14, here's the discrepancies that we get. You date it to 1 to 2 million years. Now, that's a 50% error rate right there. When you say, hey, this thing is 1 to 2 million years old, well, if it's off 50%, would you call that science? You know, I'm a general contractor. If I built you a house and you said, well, how much is this house going to cost me? And I say, well, somewhere between $100,000 and $200,000. Wouldn't you say, sir, could you get that a little bit closer? How big a house are you going to build me? Well, it'll be somewhere between 2 and 4,000 feet. Sir, could you get that just a little closer? I can't think of anything in business or in construction over here where we could be off by 50% and have a customer actually buy that. I never have had an experience where I gave a guy a price on a house and said, well, it'll be between $100,000 and $200,000 and the house will be somewhere between 2,000 and 4,000 feet. I don't know which. We'll wait until we get it finished and then we'll let you know. Huh? When we build a house, we know that it's going to be exactly 2,436 square feet when we get through. You know, we've measured it up. It's on the plans. We know exactly when we bid the job in that it's going to be $136,800. We bid it in, remember? And when we get through with the job and I say, oh, excuse me, I made a mistake. We're a little off. Instead of $136,800, it's $236,800. Just cut me a separate check. You can't do that anywhere else, but you can with evolution and uniformitarianism. Tree roots were fossilized in monuments recently when a high voltage line fell near Grand Prairie, Alberta, Canada in 1973. Scientists at the University of Regina, Saskatchewan were asked what the results would be if these specimens were dated by potassium argon. They said the test would be meaningless. It would indicate an age of millions of years because heat was involved in the petrification process. Now, did you catch that? Heat. Well, what about all of the hot volcanic ash that's been finding at other sites? In other words, if you go out here to a volcano and you're going to date the volcanic rock, wasn't heat involved? Well, then how in the hell can it be accurate if heat was involved? And the scientists at the university say, well, it would be meaningless because it would indicate an age of millions of years because heat was involved in the petrification process. Honest to God, you know, If this were a conversation that you were holding in an insane asylum, you would excuse him by saying, "Well, the poor guy is insane." Now, these people hold professorships in your college, and you're paying these guys big money to come in here and talk to you and use these kinds of terms and this kind of language and give you these kinds of numbers. Hey, you college kids out there, you're paying money for this. Going on, discovered in 1947, now we're talking about carbon-14 now. Carbon-14 dating was discovered back in 1947 by Willard F. Libby. The carbon-14 system is used to measure the percentage of unstable carbon-14 isotopes in once living objects. The results of the tests are supposed to give the number of years that have passed since the specimen died. So what are the limits? The half-life of carbon-14 is 5,730 years. So, in five half-lives, that's 29,000 years, very little of the C14 isotope would remain in the specimen. An accurate conclusion would be unlikely. Half-life is the time required for half of the unstable element to break down into its daughter elements. So generally, objects assumed to be older than 50,000 years would not make it into the C14 test lab. All right, so first of all, carbon-14 testing can only date back to 29,000 years. That's point number one. So when we're talking about millions, billions, and quadrillions of years, you can forget that because C14 isn't going to help you any. And so is there room for error? The whole system depends on a steady, unchanging rate of radiation through the atmosphere for at least the last 30,000 years. There are a number of unprovable assumptions that are in this methodology. Let's illustrate it this way. So imagine appearing in a sealed room with nothing but a candle. The candle has been burning there, and you are now asked to determine how long the candle has been burning. Now, as you begin to assess the situation, you realize the total impossibility of meeting the challenge. You might think of figuring how long the dripping wax took to accumulate. Or you could get very technical and try to measure the relative amounts of oxygen and carbon dioxide gases in the room compared to outside the room. But how can you know if someone had ever opened and then reshut the window? Could any past condition have caused it to burn faster or burn slower? Or was it ever put out and then relit later? See, these are all things that are viable questions that we need to ask in that circumstance. And without the answers to that, we wouldn't be able to calculate how long the candle had been burning. And that's the problem we have with radiometric dating. There are assumptions here that the cosmic energy has been the same over the past 30,000 years, but we don't know that. We assume it is. That's what uniformitarianism does. It takes a look at the Grand Canyon and says, well, the river's running through the canyon, and every 100 years it scours out 2 inches. Therefore, this canyon must have been made over a period of time at the rate of 2 inches per year. Well, they're at the north rim. It's about a mile deep. So let's go with 5,280. And then let's multiply that times 12 inches. So that'll give us the number of inches. So it's 5,280 times 12. Now let's divide that by 2. And the Grand Canyon would be carved out in 31,680 years. Now, is there anybody that believes that? Now, it's probably true that the Grand Canyon was carved out from Noah's flood in a day or two, or a week or two, or maybe a month or two. But 31,680 years is how long it took to dig it out, based upon the numbers that those people are using. Now, On the one hand, they tell us the canyon is billions and billions of years old, but it's being carved out at the rate of 2 inches every 100 years. Well, excuse me. I got to go times 100 years here. Times 100. I got the wrong number there. Well, that'd be 3,168,000 years. And yet they're telling us this thing is billions and billions of years old. Another thing they don't tell you about the Grand Canyon, I'm going to throw this in because I got it from Kent Hovind. You go down to Page, Arizona, and down at Page, where the canyon begins, the elevation down there is 1,600 feet. Then when you get up on the north rim, the elevation is 7,000 feet. And then when you get down to Hoover Dam, the elevation, I think, if I remember right, was 800 feet. Now, it makes all the sense in the world for the river to run from 1,600 feet downhill to 800 feet through the canyon. What doesn't make any sense is, well, how in the hell do you get this river to run uphill from 1,600 feet to 7,000 feet, and then from 7,000 feet down to 800 feet? Remember, you got all that land mass in between that it washed out. Now, that doesn't make any sense, but it makes sense if you had a big flood and the waters that had been impounded ran all the way up to Idaho. And they encompassed the Salt Lake and a couple of three other big lakes. They have a name for that. Geologists do. And then the impoundment washed out, and all that water ran down the Colorado River ditch and carved that canyon out, and all of the debris from it is found in places like Arizona and New Mexico. Now, that makes some sense. Or Arizona, Southern California, out there in the Mojave Desert, as it ran into the Gulf of Lower California. That makes sense, and it fits with the Bible. But to take a look at the canyon today, it doesn't make sense. And then when you try to use radiometric dating on here, these radiometric dates don't add up either. And that's because carbon-14 can't measure back 3,168,000 years. That doesn't have it. Doesn't hack it. Now, are there known discrepancies in C14-dated samples? There are. Listen to this. Mollusks that are still living, alive right now, you test them, and they test 2,300 years old. Huh? Come on. Mortar from an English castle less than 800 years old tested 7,370 years old. Seal skins, fresh, dated 1,300 years old. Now, you may wonder how any C14 dates can be trusted, especially if you do not have another way to test for accuracy. Now, these are examples of we know how old this is. Then we apply the radiometric dating to it, and it flunks miserably. But we are assured that when we're being told that a mollusk or a bone or something dug out of the ground and we don't know how old it was, we're assured that it's 100% accurate. Huh? Come on. And you're paying money? You're going to college? Hey, kid, you're going to college and you're paying thousands of dollars for this kind of information? And by the way, these are the numbers that come right out of their own textbooks. These are the stories, you know, that you pull right out of the textbooks and you put the numbers to it. You know, you put the pedal to the metal, and when you get done, it don't add up. Now, you don't have to be a Rhodes Scholar, you know, to put the numbers to this and to put it to rest. Now, you don't need to believe the Bible, and you don't need to believe God, and you don't have to turn to Catholicism. You don't have to get religious. But if nothing else, you know now that uniformitarianism is total trash. Just total trash. Now, you can sit there and say, I think the Bible is total trash. All right, now you know that uniformitarianism is total trash. Now, let's figure out some third answer to this. Now, what things could alter the decay rate of carbon-14? And there's four. Atmospheric pollution from volcanic activity and industrial burning. That can alter the radiocarbon 14 dating. Solar activity and changes like solar flares and sunspots could change it. Cosmic radiation from extraordinary events in our galaxy, like a supernova explosion of a star, and or number four, meteors or larger cosmic bodies falling to Earth. An example of how meteors have affected C14 readings occurred in Siberia on June 30, 1908. Now read about the riddle of the Great Siberian Explosion in the Reader's Digest of August 1977. And according to reports, the carbon-14 measurements of tree rings around the world were greatly altered as a result of the blast, giving inaccurate readings. So how can we measure any sample and calculate in the effects of past environmental changes? The carbon-14 system depends on the idea that there have been no globally catastrophic events in the past 50,000 years. If conditions on Earth were very different in the past, and especially before the flood, then C14 is nearly worthless, particularly for ages beyond 5,000 years. Now, this author here uses the term, is nearly worthless. Excuse me. It is totally worthless. Totally worthless. There isn't any semblance of anything about it that you could rely upon. It's a great idea, and I don't deny it. And if it worked, it would be wonderful. It doesn't work. But it works fine for deception. And if that's the name of the game, well, then it's right up there. You've succeeded in doing that. It is admitted that carbon-14 has credibility in determining the ages of items in the lower range of 3,000 years or so. But many thousands of things have been C14 tested, some with very shocking results. The following information comes from several issues of a scientific journal called Radiocarbon. So keep in mind that things older than 50,000 years could not have enough C14 to measure, if indeed they were really that old. And according to the popular traditions of our day, this chart is intended to portray the progressive ages of the Earth's history. They tested an object here, a saber-toothed tiger. And the supposed age by the geologic chart now is 100,000 to 1 million years old. The C14 test result 28,000. Natural gas. The supposed age by the geologic chart says it's 50 million years old. It carbon-14 tested at 34,000 years old. Coal is supposed to be 100 million years old by the geologic chart, tested 1,680 years old. Is there ever any agreement between the geologic chart ages and actual radiometric tests on the materials found at the various identified levels? And the answer to that is no. There's a challenge. If the geologic chart has any basis in fact, and if radiometric dating methods have any absolute scientific accuracy, then why won't someone undertake a study to simply produce a complete analysis of the entire sequence? Now keep in mind that the so-called geologic periods are named entirely with the theory of evolution in mind. The names are totally arbitrary. They mean absolutely nothing except what believers in the theory want them to mean. And most of the names were assigned over 100 years ago, long before radiometric methods were known. So consider the following. Paleozoic means ancient life, Mesozoic means middle life, and Cenozoic means recent life. Cambrian refers to the ancient name for whales in Great Britain. And from the Bulletin of the Geological Society of America in Volume 69, published in January 1958, Kurt Tekert writes, "No coherent picture of the history of the Earth could be built on the basis of radioactive dating. evolution demands millions of years, but if millions of years are mythical and evolution is untrue, then the whole foundation of historical geology vanishes in the tide that destroys every house built on error. Bottom line, radiometric dating, all three forms of it, totally unreliable. Totally. There isn't any merit to it at all. Zero merit. That's where reality is. All right, let me give you a mid-course reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service which is brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review, they may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans. And their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about radiometric dating here. And okay, the conclusion is that it's totally unreliable. It isn't partly good and partly bad, and there's some good that comes out of it, and maybe you can depend upon some of these dates. You can't depend upon any of the dates at any time for any cause or reason, and the bottom line is the Earth is not older than 6,000 or 7,000 years, and in any event, all of these tests show that the Earth is less than 10,000 years old. Less than 10,000 years. All of them. Now listen to this. Have you ever heard of a thing called juvenile water? Juvenile water. That's a scientific term. When volcanoes erupt on the Earth today, as much as 20% of the erupted material is water. This water has come from deep beneath the crust of the Earth, where being under very high pressure, its temperature was extremely hot. This water soars into the atmosphere as steam and soon condenses down as rain. This water has never been on the surface of the Earth before, and that's why it's called juvenile water. Well, every time another volcano erupts, there is more water being added to the oceans. Water that was never there before. So let's think about this for a minute. What information can be gained from a process like this to tell us something about the beginning of things? For instance, how long would it take for all of the ocean water of the world to accumulate from volcanic emissions alone? Well, scientists have observed volcanoes erupting at the rate of about a dozen a year. And altogether, it's been estimated that their total output of juvenile water amounts to roughly 1 cubic mile. Okay, so write that down. If you've got 12 volcanoes erupting every year, and they're erupting and they've got measurements to measure the amount of water, 20%, 12 equals 20%. And then it equals about 1 cubic mile of water per year. Okay, now that's fair enough. By simple mathematics, we can now easily calculate backwards to find out how long it would take to produce all of the present water on planet Earth, and how much water fills the Earth's oceans, lakes, and streams today. Well, the answer is 340 million cubic miles. So write that down, 340 million. 340 million. I'm writing it down. All right. Now figure it out. At the rate of 1 new cubic mile of water being added every year, it would take 340 million years to completely account for the origin of all of the Earth's surface water. So now, what's the implication of that? Well, based on just this one method alone, the logical conclusion is that there were no oceans at all on Earth 340 million years ago. Got that? Now, all of the slick four-color textbooks in your college library there, or in your desk, tell you that the oceans have been there for a billion years. That's their assumption, been there a billion. How do they know that? They're just guessing. They ain't got a clue. They don't know. The only reason that I know is because I read it in a book. And the guy that wrote the book said it's about 6,000 years ago. And he said, I created the heavens and the earth. And then the second thing he did was he separated the land from the water. I mean, there's a guy who tells you, I was there, I did it, I saw it, heard it, tasted it, touched it, and smelled it, and gave us an affidavit, and gave us a report. Now, according to traditional evolutionary chart of Earth's history, 340 years ago was smack in the middle of the Age of Fishes. Now, do you see the problem? Keep in mind that the popular idea of the origin of life assumes that the oceans were essentially full of water at least 2,000 million years ago. That's 2 billion years. So the assumption that they have here is that the oceans were there a billion years ago or 2 billion years ago, and it's out of this primordial soup, you know, that life evolved. Well, today we're watching 12 volcanoes. Now notice these guys use the word uniformitarian here. And they tell us, hey, what you're watching today, when you're watching the Colorado River going through the Grand Canyon, that's the way that canyon was formed. Okay. That's your story. I'm just repeating your story to you. That's what you told us. And you're telling us that what we're seeing today, okay, well, what we're seeing today is 12 volcanoes a year putting 1 cubic mile of water into the oceans every year. That's what we're observing right now. Now, Lyle and all of the uniformitarians says that's exactly what's been going on for 2 billion years. Okay. That's your story. Now, when we apply the numbers to it, and then we listen to your story, the Age of Fishes was 340 million years ago, and the oceans have been there for 2 billion years, and we apply what we see from the volcanoes today, the numbers, again, don't add up. And, hey, you kids there in college, hey, wake up here. You can figure that out. You can figure that out. You don't need a degree from college to put those numbers together. I'm sure you can do it. So why don't you? Now, you can reject the Bible. I'm not telling you to accept it. I'm just saying, now, what are you going to do with this lion sack of trash? Now, these guys aren't mistaken. These are very competent, skillful, articulate, educated professors, scientists. I mean, hell, these people writing these textbooks over here, they're the creme de la creme. These are the people that are the leaders and the shakers and the movers of the New World Order, of the political establishment, of economics, of academics. These people aren't wrong. They're damn liars. That's what that boils down to. They're not just liars. Liars are people that make mistakes and put down lies, and they actually believe them themselves. Hell, these people know this is crap. That's why I said they're damn liars, not just ordinary liars. Now let's take a look at erosion. Consider the present rate of erosion tearing down the world's land mass and filling into the oceans. The indications of continental geography show that past rates of erosion were much greater than today's rate of erosion. But even so, we'll leave that one lie. At the present rate of erosion, this is where we just take a look at how much dirt's coming out the Amazon and coming out the Nile River and coming out the Mississippi. You know, these guys are writing these textbooks and telling us these stories, taking our tax money and living off of it. And they give us reports, and here's what they tell us. There should have accumulated 30 times more sediment in the ocean than there is. So they go down here to the bottom of the ocean and say, okay, let's measure the sediment, and they do. Of course, this is based on the assumption that the ocean's been there for at least a billion years. The ocean's been there for a billion years. Well, boys and girls, there's only 340 million cubic miles of water in the oceans. There hasn't been enough time for the oceans to have been there for a billion years, using uniformitarianism. So obviously, either we had more volcanoes putting more water into the atmosphere in the past, which means that uniformitarianism doesn't work, because what we're observing today is interrupted by greater periods in the past, maybe even catastrophic periods in the past. Or, if that's the case, well, then the oceans haven't been there for a billion years. They've only been there for 340 million. You know, take it one way or the other, but you can't have it both ways. Well, I guess you could if you're in an insane asylum. Even more surprising is the discovery that all the continents on Earth would be worn down to sea level in just 14 million years. But there's no evidence for such drastic erosion. The mountains and valleys on Earth appear to have been recently made. Their sharp angular appearance testifies to their youthfulness. The Earth is pretty young, boys and girls. It's less than 10,000 years old. And if you want to know how old it is, it's 6,034 years. If you want to know when God said, and God said it was good, and he rested on the seventh day. That was about 6,034 years ago. That's according to his chronology. That's not me. I wasn't standing there. I don't know. I'm just taking his chronology. He's the guy that said, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And then he goes on and he tells a little story and he says, and old Joe over here had a son at age 130, and Tom had a kid over here, and he was 82 years old when he had the kid, and so on down the line. And there's a genealogy in there. I just followed the genealogy out, and when I got to the end of it, I added it up, and it was 6,034 years. Got that? All right. One writer observed concerning topsoil that the soil which sustains life lies in a thin layer of an average depth of 7 or 8 inches over the face of the land. The earth beneath it is as dead and sterile as the moon. That thin film of soil is all that stands between man and extinction. So how long does it take for topsoil to accumulate? Well, scientists estimate that the combination of plant growth, bacterial decay, and erosion produces 6 inches of topsoil in 5,000 to 20,000 years. Well, boys and girls, here we come with 5,000 to 20,000 years. For crying out loud. Now, that's a an error factor of 400%. Hell, we got to be able to come closer than that. Now, I went to ag school, and when I got into the agricultural thingy over here, here's what the actual scientific test showed. Every 90 years, in a forest environment, the earth adds 1 inch of topsoil. That's 1 inch every 90 years. Out on the prairies, it's about the same. Now, in the deserts, it doesn't. It takes a lot longer. But if you're out in the forest or you're out in the prairies, then it's about 1 inch every 90 years. All right. Here where I am in the Ozarks, in the 1880s, they actually measured it. It was 2 feet deep here. 2 feet. That was 24 inches. Now, if you take 24 inches times 90 years, that's 2,160 years. 2,160 years to build up 2 feet of topsoil. In Iowa, there are places where there's topsoil that's 6 feet deep. When you get into river valleys, sometimes it's 30 feet deep, where it's been washed in. All right, now, with that much information in our head, if the Earth has been going on about the same as it is today for millions of years, one wonders why there isn't a whole lot more topsoil than there is today. Maybe it's just another sign that the Earth hasn't been here that long. All right, well, let's try this out. I'm going to take a period of time. Let's take 1 million years, okay? Let's divide 1 million years by 90, which equals 1 inch. And that gives us 11,000. Is that right? 11,111 inches. Let's divide that by 12. And that'll give us 925 feet. 925 feet. You follow that? Now, there are some places where the topsoil is 30 feet deep, where it's been washed in a river valley, like the Mississippi River over here. There are places where the topsoil is 6 feet deep up in Iowa. On average around the world, it's about 7 or 8 inches. Some places, there isn't any topsoil at all. But, you know, in the places around the world where topsoil is being built, and assuming that uniformitarianism is a really relevant factor, there should be at least one or two places in the world where the topsoil is 925 feet deep, and there isn't. And listen, these guys tell us 1 million years is just as long as man's been on the planet. That there was billions of years before that, you know, with vegetation and the age of fishes and the age of dinosaurs and so on. You know, here's another one doesn't add up. Now, Henry Morris did 70 of these. I'm just giving you a few. I'm just giving you a handful. Remember, we took a look at the Big Bang, comets, thermodynamics, design, random chance, radiometric dating, juvenile water. Now we're talking about erosion and topsoil. I'm on number 9, topsoil. I'm going to take a look at Niagara Falls, coral reefs, stalactite growth, igneous crystal buildup. What is the oldest living thing on Earth? Population studies. The magnetic field, dissolved minerals in the ocean, atmospheric helium, what formed the Earth's rock layers, natural selection, is life getting more complex, what is the geologic chart all about? When we take a look physically at these subject matters and analyze them, uniformitarianism falls on its face every single time. Morris, in 70 of these subject matters, couldn't find evolution or uniformitarianism that could stand up to scientific scrutiny in any of 70. I've only got 22 here. I don't have all 70 of them. I haven't got enough time to cover that many. But I picked out a handful of them here. I said, let's take a look and analyze these and see what the hell it shows us. Now, there isn't 925 feet of topsoil anywhere in the world. And if there is, send me an email and tell me where that's located, would you? But there should be some places around here. A million years ago in geologic time was just the other day, you know, according to evolutionary theory here. Juvenile water, same thing. I mean, you know, these volcanoes are sucking this water deep out of the Earth's crust, and they're sticking water in here. It's never been here before. From, you know, miles deep in the Earth, it's going up in the atmosphere. It's a cubic mile a year. Uniformitarianism says been going on for billions of years. No, it hasn't. Topsoil. No, it hasn't. And their numbers here vary by 400%, 5,000 to 20,000 years. Let's try another one here. The watershed of the Mississippi River transports a tremendous amount of silt downstream. You go out here to the Mississippi River. It's called the Muddy Mississippi. Every year, the delta deposits, and it's getting bigger every year. It's enlarging by a known amount every year. You know, they go down there, and they got satellites up here. They got guys running down here around in airboats, and they're measuring that stuff all the time. You know, it keeps these guys off the streets and out of the pool halls. You know, somebody has to give them a job doing something. So I'm down there measuring the silt. So here's what they figured out. Here's your tax dollars at work for you now. There isn't any indication that any of this silt has ever been carried very far out to sea. So they go out in the ocean, find out, well, is it dropping down here in the 10,000-foot level in the middle of the Gulf of Mexico? And the answer is no. It's all being deposited right there in the delta. Right there close to shore. And they're measuring it every year. Well, at the present rate, the entire Mississippi River Delta would have accumulated in only 5,000 years. Now, science acknowledges that the river has been even bigger in the past. Well, how could that be? Unless, of course, the North American continent, and all of the other continents for that matter, just haven't been in their present positions any longer than that. Mississippi down here. I mean, you could sit there and argue with me and say, ha-ha! See, Gordon, since the flood in 2368, didn't happen in 2368, it was 3152. I mean, we could sit here and argue over a few hundred years, you know, about when the process started. But it sure as hell ain't millions and billions, and that's what they're selling. These guys are telling us, you know, these millions and millions. Remember old Carl Sagan? Billions and billions of years ago. That guy wasn't just a liar. He was a master damn liar. That guy knew better than that. Let's try Niagara Falls. That's quite a sight, that Niagara Falls. I was up there a couple of times. That's a fur piece, and that's a bunch of water going over the top of that hillside there. This famous waterfall is a magnificent example of a geologic clock that reveals a very young Earth, because the rim of the falls is wearing back at a known rate every year, and geologists recognize that it has only taken about 5,000 years to erode from its original precipice. That was news to me. I was up there. I looked down there at the bottom, and you can see big boulders down there. I never thought about it very much, about how that thing is eroding back. It erodes back about 2 feet every year. I didn't know that. Yeah, it's eroding back about 2 feet every year. And I said, wow, that's kind of interesting. Now, apply uniformitarianism to it. See, they can go forward now. Let's see how many feet further ahead it was. We go back here 5,000 years and it's 2 feet a year. That's 10,000 feet, about 2 miles. 2 miles. So the river has eroded back about 2 miles from where it was originally formed. And they're measuring that, and it's about 5,000 years. Well, gee, maybe some years it was eroding back at 3 or 4 feet a year, and then it slowed down. Or maybe it was eroding back at 10 feet a year, and now it's down to 2 feet a year. See, we don't know how much that thing was eroding back and how fast. There wasn't anybody there measuring it. But we are measuring it today. And we know where the original precipice was. and it was 2 miles. And so now you put the numbers together, and what do you get? That's all there is to it. You can do that yourself. Why don't you go figure that out? Go pick up a book on Niagara Falls, somebody. I bet you if you got online and did a Google search and you came up with Niagara Falls, I bet you there's more information there on that thing than you can shake a stick at. And you can rest assured that there's bureaucrats and government tax money going into measuring that thing. Take the numbers and let's see where it leads you. Now there's another little story over here. Coral reefs, the buildup of calcium carbonate remains of marine creatures in the warm oceans of our world could be accounted for entirely in the few thousand years since the worldwide flood. And you've heard about these stalactite growths in caves? Well, if you've toured in a limestone cave, you were likely told that the formations of dripstone developed very slowly over a period of more than 100,000 years. So what is the evidence of that? Well, under the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C., stalactites have grown to 5 feet in less than 50 years. You got that? 5 feet in less than 50 years. Other evidence shows that the cave formations could be easily accounted for in tens of thousands of years at the most. How about igneous crustal buildup? With a dozen volcanoes a year on Earth now, there is a steady addition of new igneous rock coming out of the ground. There is more volcanic activity on the ocean floor that cannot be measured. The observation of our geography shows there have been times in the past when there has been much more intense volcanism. Conservatively looking at the statistics then, from what we can observe today, the entire crust of the Earth could have developed without any other processes beside volcanism in only 500 million years. So could the land have been missing in the Cambrian period? Or is it possible that the dry land was created in a relatively short time, a short period or short time ago? Now remember, they're telling us this thing here has been here and been working, developing over billions and billions of years. Hell, just looking at the volcanoes that are here on Earth today, all that we're looking at on the entire Earth's crust would only take 500 million years. That's a half a billion. Again, the numbers don't add up. Now, you'd think these guys would get their act together, but you see, when Darwin wrote back in, 150 years ago, 1859, and when Lyell and the rest of these guys were writing their books, they had ideas. And their ideas had merit. But their ideas over time have been shown to be false. Now, look, boys and girls, when you make a mistake and your idea is wrong, then it's time to come forward and say, gee, here's what I thought, but that wasn't correct. It was wrong, so let's change it, and let's get in step with something that's more intelligent. And these guys won't do that. They just keep throwing out the evidence, as I showed you last week. And they ignore it and hide it. That's why I said, they're not just liars, they are damn liars. They know that what they're telling you is a damn lie. And then you're spending money on these textbooks and going to college and taking tests and paying money to learn lies. That's why I thought I would tell you. Hey, meanwhile, I've got to close off here. We're about out of time. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, time's up. We've got to leave it right there. I'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.